Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and I am joined this week by Brian Ashlock. Unfortunately, Ben couldn't join us because he is too cool for us. And by too cool, I mean he has a job and has to wake up early and doesn't want to feel hungover because he is a lame square who is an old man who can't hang anymore is what I'm trying to say. But Brian and I are here because we can hang, and we're both on at least our second beers. So we're here to follow up. Now that the season's over, we still have stuff to talk about. Today we're going to talk about our dearly departed center back, Jan Vertonghen. I don't know. I feel like Vertonghen was the first major sort of – one of the first major signings of my time as a Spurs fan. I mean, we had Vandervaart and a few other guys, but Vertonghen was felt like the first real long-term signing that I saw as a Spurs fan. And there was something very cool about watching a guy sort of spend the prime years of his career. And I think all the links to Vertonghen away from Spurs were really sort of the product of our fevered imaginations as opposed to something that we actually had to deal with. But I don't know. But Brian, that's my sort of half-baked elevator pitch of what I thought about Jan Vertonghen. What do you think about Jan Vertonghen? He has wrapped up his time at Tottenham Hotspur. It looks like he's on his way to Roma. But I think he certainly defines an era of this team. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's very much that he is, you know, probably one of the first players you think of when you think of this kind of this era of Spurs. And I mean that in a way of after you get past the Harry Kane and the Gareth Bale. I really think that Vertonghen is one of those players that just was kind of very much in the image of what Spurs was during the time that he was here. I mean, he spent 8 years at the club. And I mean, for most of it, he was pretty comfortably our best defender or one of our best defenders. I think if you looked at some of the stuff that Spurs did and his teammates did after him leaving the club, it was really clear that he was really well respected, that everybody thought really highly of him, not just as a player, but as, you know, a leader and an important figure in the dressing room. And I just very much I really love Jan Vertonghen. I have a Jan Vertonghen kit, the purple Under Armour with Vertonghen on the back, and I'm gonna miss him. I just love him so much.
Well, there's something about when Spurs fans talk about what we expect out of Tottenham, there's a certain expectation of a bit of flair, a bit of playing the game in a certain way. And I think sometimes we lay that on a little thick as Spurs fans and we're a little delusional about it. But I think it's very real in terms of, at a minimum, what Spurs fans expect. And I think, I don't know, maybe because I'm coming off of Ledley King before him, who's a little bit of a different center back, but also someone who could play the ball. You know, there's something about having a guy like Vertonghen on a team like Tottenham who was like, yeah, he's a center back. Yeah, he's good at a last ditch tackle. But, you know, the fact that he could take the ball forward when he wanted to, the fact that he always wanted to, he clearly wanted to score goals extremely bad, maybe too badly sometimes. But, you know, he could be a very elegant, might be overstating it a little bit, but not by much, I think. That, you know, there was something about him that very much fit Tottenham. And he was also the kind of player we needed at the time. We needed a player like that. And I don't know. It was just, he was always very fun to watch because he was so good on the ball. And, you know, he did have that little bit of attacking verve in him.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the attacking verve was, especially in kind of where he went through that fallow period where he just couldn't score. And we had a whole season and a half where any game where we were up by two goals was just basically get Jan Vertonghen a goal time. You know,
but he also had this hard luck. He would like miss opportunities, or like a keeper would like make an amazing save on him, or something. Like,
right, and it was just like, you know, him hunting for a goal like at the end of matches was always my like one of my favorite things. Like, we'd be knocking it around the box, and he'd like move up from his, you know, whether he was playing on the left side of a back three or whether he was playing center back, he would just move into kind of the attacking third and take pot shots, or try to work his way into the box. Like, it was great. You know, but I think that attacking verve, like, it was one of those things where, you know, it came from his versatility. You know, he got into the team of the season that first year he was at Spurs, and he played a lot of left back that year. And he, you know, and the next season he plays more center back, and you know, and eventually he gets the partnership with Toby Alderweireld, and you know, that's kind of, to me, like peak era of Vertonghen, kind of that 15-16 through basically 17-18, those three seasons, you know, him and Alderweireld were the probably the best center back partnership in the Premier League. Maybe I one of the best in Europe
for those like 3 years. It's hard for me to. There was Ramos and Pepe at Madrid for a while, right? Like that would have been during the season.
I don't know if it. I mean, that was probably like the very end of Pepe, like the 15-16.
Ramos is so good. But yeah, no, I mean, certainly in England, I think that Vertonghen and Alderweireld were by far the best center back partnership in England for, I would say, about 3 years. I mean, they were incredible together. And I want to talk a little bit more about that pairing in a little bit. But I what's your sort of, when you think of Vertonghen, if I say Jan Vertonghen, what's the sort of like quintessence? What do you think of? What's the moment or the play or whatever, like what's the thing that pops into your head if when you think of Jan Vertonghen?
I mean, the first thing you think of is the goal celebration for me, like the Superman goal celebration. Like I love that, like, you know, and I think that's so perfect for him and the person that he was. But I don't know, you definitely think of him pulling down Hellenius's pants in the box, which, I mean, that doesn't say a lot.
You didn't get carded for that. That's incredible. Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't say a lot for, you know, the quality of player he was. But like that moment was just one of my favorites. And then I don't know. What else do I think of? I mean, look, you know, the Dortmund match in the Champions League where he plays left wing back. And gets a goal and an assist. You know, him coming back and playing the second Ajax match in the Champions League that same year with the face mask on. You know,
I've forgotten about him like almost dying on the pitch when he got hurt in that Champions League. I forgot about that.
And I mean, I think, you know, I think about him at the Battle of the Bridge. You know, like there are so many like good moments, and there was a highlight video that came out. I think the team put it out, but it may have just been something I pulled on the internet. But it was just like all the last ditch tackles, like all
against Arsenal was the one that last year actually, the one against Arsenal after
Aubameyang.
Yeah, after his penalty. It's like it's definitely one of the things I think about with him.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, personally, I don't really think about Vertonghen's tackling skill when I think about him. You know, I always thought more about, you know, his ability on the ball, his
Well, you know. I think that's actually, like, I don't know about you. I mean, sorry, I'm interrupting you, but like the stuff you're talking about, I think, is going to jive a little bit with the stuff I'm going to talk about in a second. And like one of the things, and I think it's the highest compliment I could pay a defender, is those tackles almost stand out because, like, one of the things that with Vertonghen, and I would say this about Ledley King, I would say this about Alderweireld to a large extent, and I wouldn't say it about someone like Juan Foyth, is just like you think about, you never had to worry about them. You were never scared when they were like one on one with a striker because they just weren't getting smoked by, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure we could dig up examples of like Aguero blowing past him or whatever, but like, certainly for the largest portion of his career at Tottenham, like, you didn't have to worry about Vertonghen getting like exposed by another attacker or like completely waxed by, you know, someone. It was like, you know, he was always very steady, at least for the large part of his career at Spurs.
Yeah, and I think the knock on him early on was that he maybe wasn't as physical as was required by the Premier League. I'm pretty sure I recall Drogba in some of those early seasons kind of having his way with him. But, you know, I think once he and Alderweireld started their partnership, like that sort of and Vertonghen was in, you know, his third season in the league. I don't think the physicality aspect ever really entered back into it. I think he always had enough pace that he wasn't somebody who had to play a lot of catch up. And his positioning was already always pretty good. So yeah, I think he was, like you said, he wasn't somebody that we ever had to be concerned about, to look at and go, I don't know, like, is he going to get roasted here by this guy? Like, you know, and we played, you know, some great strikers. I mean, we played, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo when he's at Real Madrid, and you know, against Lionel Messi, and he's had to deal with Salah and Drogba and Aguero, and you know, pretty much everybody that's been any good in the Premier League over the years. And I can't really think of anybody that like consistently got the better of him or really just absolutely roasted him ever.
I'm sure there are examples of that, but it's not, it didn't happen in a way where you're like, it's all you can think about, or it's like, or, you know, it sticks out in your mind. You just, he was very reliable. And I think it's a credit. Like, certainly when I think of him, it's not, it's almost not his defensive stuff that really comes to mind, because I mean, you know, the last ditch tackles, but it's almost like he was so reliable that you think about, it gives you room to think about all the other stuff he could do. Cause he was such a versatile player. Partly cause he was such an intelligent player. I think it's a real credit to him. He was able to play left back as well as he was. And he's not a fast guy. He's not someone with a bunch of speed to burn, you know, like even like a Davinson Sanchez, who the kind of person who you might look at their skill set and think like, oh, maybe they could play some fullback. But he was able to, like, you know, I mean, honestly, especially earlier in his career when he was a little more physically, you know, able to run. But a lot of what made him an effective left back or getting forward is just he was smart about it, and he just wouldn't get, you know, not, you know, caught with his pants down, if you will, which is, you know, another thing he did. But he was just such a intelligent, fun player to watch. And I certainly, what I think of him was that 1-2 he played with Bale. I think in his first season here, I remember that he was in like the Chevron Under Armour kit, and they played this 1-2 in the other team's box. And I remember Bale like lays it off to him, and he pokes it in, and it's Vertonghen pokes it in, and it was just like, I don't know, like, maybe because I got used to watching, like, Michael Dawson and Ledley King, who just, like, as talented as those guys could be, like, they weren't marauding forward all the time. But, you know, it's just his ability. He was just such a versatile center back, and he was, I don't know, on the extra inch they were talking this week about, like, I hope he gets a testimonial, and I think the traditional English, but it's weird, we're Americans, obviously, so for us, the sort of, like, club legend, you know, thing that happens in our sports is you get your number retired, you know, in baseball or football in America, you get your number retired, and that doesn't really happen in Europe or in soccer in general. So I guess like testimonial is sort of what would happen there. And I think 10 years is a sort of barrier for that. But I think Vertonghen is definitely a guy who deserves it. I mean, he played at such a high level. Like you said, he was definitely part of the best center back pairing in England for at least 3 years. And he was just so good at Spurs. And he's the type of guy, when you're a Spurs fan, you think about the type of center back you want. Because you don't just want someone who's, like, stout and, you know, going to sort of get stuck in. You think about someone who can play the ball and really, you know, do something skill-wise. And he was just, that was Jan Vertonghen. He was so good for us. And we just got the best of that guy's career, and I'm so happy we got to watch it.
Well, and I think one of the interesting things is, for so much of his career, he was probably like the lesser regarded of any center back pairing that he was in.
I think there was, how long was he here before we got Toby?
Like, so it's 2 seasons before Toby comes.
Yeah, so I think that's something that he suffers in perception. I don't think in actual play, but Toby's so much more physical than him. And I don't ever think, like you said, I don't think, like, I don't remember Jan, a lot of games where Jan would just get his, like, he wasn't getting his ass kicked by other players. Like, certainly not physically. He wasn't getting pushed around much. But there was something to Toby's game that was just much more fit. Like, Toby really didn't get pushed around. And Toby could also, you know, Toby was a threat on set pieces in a way Vertonghen never was, just because Toby could throw that body around. And, you know.
Well, and I think the other thing is, you know, look, like, Toby got a lot, or got and still gets a lot of credit for his range of passing.
Yep.
And playing those long diagonal balls. And it wasn't that Vertonghen wasn't playing those long diagonal balls or that he wasn't capable of doing it, because he absolutely was. But it was just, you know, I think especially kind of once we get into, you know, the air raid kind of playing through midfield or playing over the top of midfield instead of through midfield era of Pochettino, where Toby's passing and the use of the fullbacks was such a huge part of how Spurs transitioned and ran their attack. Vertonghen's role in that sort of became, you know, to be the much more steady hand and to, you know, to play it to the fullbacks or to distribute to Alderweireld so that he could play those long passes. And so, you know, he never got the kind of credit that he probably deserved for his skill on the ball. You know, that's not to say that anybody ever thought that he was bad on the ball, but certainly for at least the last, you know, 4 or 5 seasons, everybody always talks about how good Alderweireld is without really talking about how safe a pair of hands Vertonghen was.
Well, and part of that's because Alderweireld just got some, there's some flashier aspects, which isn't to say Jan couldn't be a flashy player at times. Obviously, his attacking verve is not something you generally see in center backs, and sort of his ability to carry the ball forward. But yeah, you know, like we said, like, I mean, Alderweireld just looks, I mean, you know, that guy's just fucking built in a way that not many soccer players are. And at the same time, he's just, you know, like you said, his ability to those long diagonals, just, you know, that's, Vertonghen couldn't do that, which is no indictment of Vertonghen, but that's like a crazy thing that Toby did. But I think Toby, because he's not just so good, but because he's just so, you know, you sort of look at him and he's just so much more impressive physically. It's sort of easy to forget how good Vertonghen was and how long Vertonghen was here. And I think, honestly, one of the things that's a little sad about this year is, like, I thought Vertonghen was going to age very gracefully. And in some respects he did, but he just kind of didn't, like, he kind of lost that extra step this year in a way that, I don't know, surprised me. Like, I'm very sad to see him go, but I'm not mad at the club for not giving him another contract. I think that was probably the right move because age seems to certainly have caught up with Vertonghen this year in a way that we hadn't seen before. I don't know if that's injuries or just him getting old, but certainly he just wasn't where he used to be this season. And that's not something I thought. I thought we'd have Vertonghen for another 3 or 4 year deal, and I'm just a little surprised it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, I don't know if I thought another 3 year deal, but if you'd have told me at the beginning of the season that we were going to run him down. Yeah,
I mean, going back a year or two before we saw his form, I would have thought that, you know, oh yeah, Spurs are going to re-sign Vertonghen because he's such a steady hand.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this at the beginning of the year. I think, you know, I probably said that I thought we'd extend him for another year at least, or, you know, try to, you know, 1 year with another option, an option for a second. But because like you, I didn't really foresee kind of the fall that happened, especially once Jose Mourinho joined. I mean, I think we all remember, you know, the way he looked after getting pulled in that one match. And it's just like, it's sitting on the bench, just absolutely, like, broken down in terms of, you know,
his emotional state. Well, wasn't that due to the night his house got broken into and, like, all that crazy shit happened with his family? I don't think that was because he was like, what have I become? Like, I know at the time I thought that's what it was because he was not very good in that game. But I think it was because, like, someone broke into his house and stole a bunch of shit or threatened his family. I can't remember exactly how it went.
You are right. He did have something going on after. But I also feel like he didn't necessarily ever really come back after that and give a good performance.
I mean, he's going, it's by all accounts, sounds like he's going to Roma. And if there's any top league in the world where being a little bit off the pace isn't going to hurt you, it's Italy. So I really hope that he does very well at Roma. I mean, you know, Roma seems like a bit of a, you know, like a, it's just, Roma does not seem like the best club in the world to be at, but I hope he does well there. it's just, I don't know. He didn't seem to have it this year in a way that I was very surprised by, because I thought Jan Vertonghen was going to age extremely gracefully, and he just hasn't. And, you know, if we had to pick, like, as much as I love Jan, and I think Jan was much more important to Spurs than, and maybe in a few years Toby will sort of prove me wrong, but I think he was a much more important of the two to Spurs. But I think I still would have picked Toby over Jan if I had to, like, pick one to extend, and I think we made the right decision there.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, age catches up to everybody, and Toby's a few years younger. And, you know, I mean, look, 315 appearances for Spurs across 8 seasons. You know, he's the most capped player in, like, Belgian history for now. And it's just,
Didn't Martinez sit him? Like, Martinez, like, just didn't play him during major tournament. Am I misremembering this? Like, I just remember he wasn't using Vertonghen in the way, like, I feel like as a Spurs fan, I was shocked at how, like, he didn't play Toby and Jan as a center back pairing for, like.
No, because he played Toby and, not for Milan. Who did he play?
But that's insane. How do you not? These guys play with each other at a club at a very high level, and you're not going to start them together? Like, ugh.
Well, and I mean, because he plays a lot, or he did play at one point a lot of left back for Belgium.
He did. He absolutely did.
Because Belgium had, like, a dearth of fullbacks, and then, like, their best fullbacks were, like, Alderweireld and Vertonghen. And so they were playing left and right back, and then you had, like, Vermaelen and, God, I can't even remember who. What's his name? Kompany. Playing center back. And so, yeah, and I mean, you probably had Alderweireld and Kompany playing center back, you know, at times. But yeah, I mean, like, so Jan played a lot of fullback, I seem to recall, for those Belgium teams. But he still has, like, 118 caps or something like that.
That just baffles me. Vertonghen and Toby were so good together in their prime, and it's crazy. I don't know. It's just crazy, but it's weird. It's going to be really weird not to see Vertonghen out there. And it's clearly something that on some level Spurs, I mean, I don't know. We bought Davidson for a lot of money a few years ago, and I don't know whose departure we were planning on. I always thought it was Toby's. But you know, clearly it just didn't work out, and I don't know. It's going to be very weird. Like I said, I'm not sure I disagree with the club's decision-making here, but it's going to be very weird not to see him in our sort of, I was about to say backfield, but, you know, in our back line next year. It's going to be very strange not to see Vertonghen back there.
So I guess that kind of raises an interesting question. And I'm interested to hear how you feel about it. But I feel like we're actually pretty well positioned with our center back options going forward. Because like you said, you know, we've got Davinson, who I think kind of over the course of the Mourinho era, and certainly since the restart, played really well.
Yeah.
I very much like the Davinson-Alderweireld partnership. And I think even, you know, Dyer and Alderweireld is a good partnership as well. And I think, you know, maybe you'd like another capable fourth center back, and maybe that's Tanganga. And I think he's good. So, you know, look, eliminating Foyth, who doesn't seem to be in favor,
and looks who like he's going to leave.
Played well, yeah, when he has been in favor. You know, I think he's leaving at a time when Spurs are actually in a pretty decent position with the options they have at that position.
So I think that's sort of, this highlights how good Jan was for us for all those years, which is he was just so steady and so reliable. So, like, in theory, on paper, Spurs are pretty well set up. We've got Alderweireld, who's what he is, and I think we can account on at least another good year or two out of him. And I think we can be very happy about that. But then we have a bunch of guys that there's some question marks about. And some of those question marks are fair, and some of them aren't. You know, like Tanganga. You know, very promising young player. I was very impressed what we saw from him, especially before it seemed like an injury kind of messed up his form. Am I remembering that correctly, Brian, or am I doing fan fiction in my head?
I thought he had a couple bad games there at the end, and then once the restart happened, then he was injured.
Yeah, I remember. I felt like he was fighting an injury. Anyway, but like certainly, you look at how he like played against Liverpool and some other teams. Like certainly, an interesting and promising young player, and I'm glad that he's in the picture. And then you've got Dyer, who I don't know what to think of Dyer. Like Dyer was garbage, and I thought Spurs need to get him out of here for a while. But he clearly had some extremely weird injuries, or at least weird for a professional athlete. And then he put together a hell of a run of games. It seems to have gotten him a new contract, but then he was kind of mediocre for a game or two. I'm not entirely sure what I think of him. And then who am I forgetting? There's Tanganga and Dyer, Toby. Who's the fourth? I'm blanking. You mentioned him. There's another one that I'm. Oh, Davidson. Davidson.
I was just gonna let you flounder. I was like, yeah, I was like, how's he gonna get this? He's got to get this.
Well, Ben's not here, but he's here in spirit. So, yeah, no, I mean, like, Davins is another guy where, like, looked really bad for, like, over a year, right? Like, I mean, he just didn't look good under a latter era Pochettino and looked a lot better under Mourinho. And in theory, I think there's definitely, like, you can cobble together a good center back pairing out of that. It's just, there's a lot of, question marks might be too strong a term, but, Jan was so reliable. If he was healthy, he was going to be good. And you never had to worry about it. And now it's like, and we might answer these questions within a few months of next season. Honestly, like I might be being a bit of a pessimist here, but we have options. It's not like I don't feel like we're like hoping Kyle Walker-Peters turns into a good right back. Like these are all guys that have a track record and, there is real reason to think each of them could be good next season or with future development, and certainly under a coach like Mourinho, who is known for defense in theory, there's certainly some reason to sort of dream on these guys. It's just I don't know, like Vertonghen was so steady. Now we're in, even though I think we're kind of well set up, I mean that's three options that you're talking about that you can sort of find a starter out of. It's those guys, there's a lot of relatively speaking question marks around them. I think we're about as set up as any non-mega club can be. But I miss the certainty of, well, we've got Jan and we've got Toby and then we have some other guys and we'll figure it out with them. Like,
yeah, I think the one thing that we will miss about having Vertonghen around, like just from a tactical perspective, is that he was an actual left-footed center back. Honestly, that was the footedness of the center backs was never something I really thought of until, Pochettino came in. He was like, look, I need to have, a left footed center back playing left center back and a right footed center back playing right center back. It was part of the reason why we wound up with Kevin Vimmer was because he was left footed. And now we don't have any left footed center backs. And it's interesting because, we had times where, at least under Pochettino, when Vertonghen went down and you saw either Davinson or Toby shift over to that left center back position where they look kind of out of sorts. And then sort of during this project restart period where you weren't seeing...
I can't believe you call it that.
I do it with a straight face and like without having to like stumble into it. I just like go for it.
I mean, you have to embrace it. You're doing it to fuck with me at this point, but I just can't...
I mean, yes, honestly, but that is also what it's called, so... but like, in the restart, we saw other players playing at the left center back position and looking a little more comfortable there than they certainly did under Pochettino. And I don't know if that's just from better prep or whatever, but, I think that is one of the things that Spurs are going to miss is having a natural left footer to play that position.
And it was a very unique thing under Poch, or at least something I had not thought about until Pochettino started.
Right. Yeah, it's very weird. And so, like, I don't know, like, now do we have to go and find, like, at least a left-footed center back? It's now something that I think about, whereas before Pochettino and before Jan Vertonghen, I literally never thought about what foot the center back played when he was on whatever side of defense.
Yeah. So let me ask you an important question. Are you going to use this Vertonghen's transfer to Roma as an excuse to buy one of those super slick new Roma kits?
100%. 100%.
Those are so good looking. They are absurdly good looking.
Walmart consistently has great kits. And I think it's the color scheme that really helps.
It is. Like, it's very hard to fuck that color scheme up.
Like, look, all you got to do is it's a maroon shirt. It's got orange and black accents. Like, it's not hard.
You can throw white in there. It's not a problem. Like, it's, you know, it's so good looking. It's so good. I don't know. What do you think? Let's do some kit talk, Brian. Let's do some kit talk because it's you and me. What do you think of Tottenham's new kits this year?
I hate the homes. Like,
okay. Can I give you my hot take on the home kits, what they look like?
Sure.
They look like a bad kit from the 90s that we all remember fondly because we won something in it.
Mm. See, to me, it looks like late 90s, early 2000s college football uniform where they all had like the shoulder stripes.
Ooh, that is a good, but not like the good, like, well, Under Armour wasn't really doing shit till like the late 2010s, but like not like the good kind of crazy college uniforms, but like the bad kind of, like,
right, like not like the Oregon or, you know, or the Maryland stuff. Maryland,
thank you.
But Northwestern has a new alternate and it's got these giant purple stripes on the sleeves and you're like, oh god.
Well, to me it's like there's like two things on the jersey. There's two major design elements. There's like the big shoulder things, and then there's like this like cracked glass pattern or whatever that fucking is. And they had to pick one. You can't have both. Like, you pick one. And they did both anyway.
Yeah, I'm not as bothered by the glass pattern. I'm not,
but both of them, it looks very dumb.
Like, I mean, the goalkeeper kits are great, I think.
Goalkeeper kits are great. The away kits are very nice. Those green ones.
Yeah, I do like the green. I want to see how they look like on TV is like the lighter green logo, and then I assume the numbers are going to be in that same lighter green shade.
Or white. It'll probably be white.
I guess that is the option. But I'm just curious to see what those look like on TV.
We haven't seen the official, like, there was a yellow kit that had been leaked that looked really nice, and then someone leaked, like, oh, it's actually gradient, and it looks fucking awful. It's like, I don't know. I miss Under Armour. Under Armour had a really high hit rate by the end of their time at Spurs. Like, I miss Under Armour's jerseys.
The main thing I don't like about the away kit is, I don't know if you, I'm looking at this right now, so I don't know if you've noticed this, but like, the side stripe on it doesn't line up.
It's fine. I like it. I don't know. The thing that bothers me is,
first of all, why is that side stripe even there? And then if it is there, why doesn't it line up? Like, why is it broken so it looks like a Z?
The thing that bothers me, if anything bothers me about the away kit, is that it's like green, which feels like a third kit. It's like, I feel like when I think of away kits, I think of blue for Spurs. Like, that's kind of what I feel like we generally have, some form of blue on our away kit. And it's just very, like, it's fine. It's like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's not as nice as it could be.
I'm definitely gonna buy this. If the third kit is the yellow one, I'm definitely buying this green one.
If it's just yellow, I could see myself getting the yellow one. But anyway,
I only have one other green football kit, and so I feel like I need a second one.
What is it?
The Bilbao, the green one from a few years ago.
Wait, you don't have the one from the finals, do you? When they made those two finals, the one with like the red stripe across it, it's like green with a red stripe across it. You have that? Fuck, I love that kit. I've been trying to buy that kit for years.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's so good. And I was mad at my, I always like keep an eye out for that on like eBay. Which, oh god, it's such a good looking jersey. I'm so mad at you, Brian. I've wanted that kit for so long.
Yeah, you should be very jealous.
Yeah, I'm very jealous. Welcome to Kit Wheeler Dealer Kit Talk. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like this year we had a really good selection of kits, and it wasn't a good year. So maybe we need a year. I mean, last year we had our ugliest home jersey in forever, and it worked out pretty well for how the season went. So maybe we need another ugly home jersey to really make the season go.
I like the training stuff for this season, too. I'm definitely getting some of that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I don't know. It's Nike's weird. I kind of wish Adidas would get our contract because I sort of hate how good Arsenal shit looks.
My problem with Nike is that we aren't a big enough club to warrant like getting something special.
I don't know. Like, I don't feel like anyone else is getting that home design we have. Maybe in a year or two, like, we'll find out some Colombian team has a similar thing. But, like, it's not good looking, but it's like different.
Like, Roma gets great Nike stuff every year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I don't know, they're not bigger than
us. I feel like Roma should be in the same, like, club bracket as us. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, they should. And I was like, I said it, and I was like, yeah, why do they get better stuff than
us? Maybe because there's, like, an element of tourism in there. Like, they're the, like, you know, no one really wants to wear Lazio stuff because, you know, Nazis. But, so, like, oh, you visit Rome, and you're like, oh, instead of buying, like, a tacky Rome t-shirt, I'll spend way too much money on a Rome soccer jersey. And you get their shit instead. But, and we don't really, I don't think Spurs really have the same thing with London. But, yeah, I don't know. I wish we had better jerseys. We don't.
The home ones will probably be fine. I just really don't like the shoulder straps.
No, I know. But I looked at it, and it's the same thing with every jersey. Honestly, I didn't have it with the away jersey. I remember seeing the home jersey last year and thinking, we're going to do something special in this jersey, so I'll have to see pictures of it for a very long time. And that's what I thought about our home jersey this year. But I definitely, like, looked at that home jersey and was like, I'm going to get Stockholm Syndrome with this. I'm not going to, like, I don't know if I'll buy it or think it's good, but I'll definitely be like, it's not that bad. Like, by the
I feel like that's kind of what happened to me with, like, the gradient kit, the home one where it looked like we were wearing, like, cummerbunds. Like, that's how, like, I hated it initially, and then by the end, because we'd had such a good season in it, I'm like, yeah, this is all right.
It just bothered me because, like, part of the thing about Spurs jerseys is, like, when we're in Europe, we wear all white, and that doesn't, like, you can't do that in that stupid jersey. Like yeah, you can't have.
You know, and honestly, the red A1A on these home jerseys still just bothers the shit out of me.
Yeah, I don't know. I've made my peace with that.
No, and I have too. And, like, I understand it, but it's just, like, it's on that, like, on the white and blue with the background with, like, the cracked glass or whatever the hell it is. It's just like, the red is just kind of obtrusive. I don't know. I just, like,
I'm sure we've talked about, we haven't done it on the podcast, but I'm sure you and I have talked about this, but I can't remember. What is your favorite Spurs jersey?
I mean, I love all the purple ones. but, you know, and I really like the sash kit. I know you're.
That's mine. But it was a good year. I mean, we didn't win the title, but we came so close. And God, I love that sash kit. It's such a good looking jersey.
And then I think there was there was one year that Under Armour just did real simple stuff, and it was just like a white kit with a collar, and then like a navy kit with a collar.
I think.
Yeah.
Oh no! You're thinking of the first year Under Armour had it, though, the chevron, like with the blue jersey with the chevrons on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first year, yeah. I don't know. I didn't like the other kits, but I love that. I love that blue jersey. It's such a good-looking jersey.
Yeah, and then I guess the other ones that I kind of like was the last year with HP, where we had, like, the teal with the navy HP on it.
Another cursed year. We can't have a year. Spurs can't have years with good. That was a Sherwood year. We can't have good-looking jerseys.
I know you like the half-and-half centennial kit.
I love the half and half, or the 125th. Yeah, I love that jersey. I think it's so good looking. Like, and it's not the kind of thing I'd want Spurs to wear.
It's horrible. I hate it so much.
It's great. It's great. Half and half is like one of the big, like I don't even know how many soccer, like, who wears a half and half jersey. It's like Blackburn.
Where do you fall on the brown ones?
Huh?
How do you feel about the brown kits?
I do not like the brown kit. The brown kits are kind of like a worse version of these green jerseys we're wearing this year, where it's kind of like, why are we using, like, it's not like it's just like a weird color scheme for us to use.
Yeah, I like any season where we have the purple. I just
purples are good. I love the Bale. I have a Bale's purple from whatever year we had that. It's a good looking jersey. You can do white highlights with it. It's good. Anyway, this is a bit jersey talk on Wheeler Dealer Radio.
The internet loves jersey talk, so
it does. They do, actually. It does kind of enjoy it.
Honestly, if you put Kit Leak in the headline of anything, people will click on it. That's what this podcast is now going to be called, Kit Leak. You're welcome, everybody.
Kit Leak Dealer Radio, I guess. So I guess there's no new real transfer news. We continue, like, certain elements of the Italian press keep pretending that, or at least saying, the Ndombele thing is a thing, but I don't know. None of that seems terribly legitimate to me. Højbjerg, is that how we're saying it?
You got it.
Yeah, all right. Højbjerg looks like it's not official. We're recording this on Thursday night at 11 o'clock. It is not official, but it looks like it is all but official. We just have to dot some I's and cross some T's. I don't know. We've talked about this at length, but I'm excited about this signing. I think it might be better than we're realizing just because I think he plugs such massive gaping holes in our team. And I don't know how you feel about this, Brian, but Højbjerg feels like the kind of player that, like, he's been at Southampton for a couple years now, but, like, I feel like you plug him into a team like Spurs where he's, regardless of what you think about Mourinho, he's going to have better players around him, and I think that could be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's very much a player that fits a specific hole in the team, and I think, you know, all really good teams have those guys that do a very specific job and fill a very specific role. I don't think that, like, Højbjerg is a transformative player in that, you know, he's, like, you know, going to be the equivalent of us signing, like, a Virgil van Dijk who comes in and magically, like, him plugging holes in midfield sorts out our defense and makes us, you know, the best team in the league. But I think, like, he certainly gives us a level of stability and, you know, tactical flexibility that we don't have with some of our midfield options. And I think that is probably the most valuable part of him. And I think you're right. I think him being surrounded by better players, you know, better creators in midfield, better, you know, better attackers, might bring out more from him. But, like, I honestly, you know, I don't care if he has a jump in assists, or I don't care if he scores goals or whatever. What I want from him is to, you know, provide solidity in midfield, to break up play, to get the ball to the playmakers that we can put around him.
You mean fix all the problems we've had since, like, 3 years ago, it feels like, at this point?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, and I mean, that's a lot to ask, obviously, but it's just that, you know, he's another cog in, you know, the ideal midfield that we should be putting out there. And, you know, look, Liverpool have that to a degree, and a player that's like, you know, Fabinho or, you know, Jordan Henderson, who just won PFA Player of the Year or whatever for some fucking reason. You know, no offense to Jordan Henderson, like, he's fine, but he's not the best player on that team, and he's certainly not the best player in the league. But he fills a very specific role, and he does that specific role very well. And I think that's kind of what you want out of Højbjerg. You want someone who knits the midfield together, who solidifies your defense, and who allows your more creative and more adventurous players, you know, the freedom to do all the stuff that they do well. In that respect, I think he's going to be a really good signing. I just, you know, is he going to be, like, the reason we, you know, finish top four or top three or whatever next year? No, I don't think so.
I mean, could be, because he might allow us to play a coherent midfield. I mean,
sure.
You know, like, I think one of the things that's interesting with the Ndombele talk is, I mean, I've talked about this on this podcast before. It really feels like Levy is controlling more of the transfer process than I would have expected when we hired Mourinho. And it seems like he's telling him, like, shut the fuck up and find a way to use Ndombele. Like, make it happen, Jose. And, you know, and I feel like getting a guy like Højbjerg in here is going to be important to that, because it's going to cover certain things that Jose's not going to have to ask, you know, Ndombele to do, and it's going to allow us to build a functional midfield. One way or another, it's going to really help us build a functional midfield. And, you know, I don't know, like, you know, in some ways we're buying him. I mean, we are buying him for his peak. I think this isn't as much of a practical signing, if that's the way I would put it, as we sort of talked about last week with Ben, in that, you know, I think this guy's like, what, he's about certain, is it 24 or 25? I can't remember.
I think he will be 25, I think.
Yeah, so he's not that old. I mean, you know, and I know some of the, when you talk about soccer players and if you're getting to their peak, it's like, are you going to be able to turn them around and sell them for a bunch of money? And, like, frankly, it's not my money, so I don't really give a shit about that at this point. My point is, we're going to probably, I mean, there's at least, in theory, barring injuries, barring some other problems, there's like 5 years of, like, prime production that we could get out of him, maybe more depending. And I don't know, that could be really useful.
Yeah, so he literally turned 25 yesterday. So I think, you know, you sign him and you sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal. You maybe anticipate like one extension somewhere in there. And yeah, I think that's pretty good. I mean, Ornstein is saying that it's basically done. And I think he had the fee as being 15 million rising to 19 with add-ons, which when you consider he got bought by Southampton for like 12, that seems like a really good deal, especially when you also consider that we're looking at sending Kyle Walker-Peters the other direction for 12. So, I mean, we would basically get him for 3 million and Kyle Walker-Peters plus add-ons. Like, that seems great.
Are you sad about seeing Walker-Peters leave?
No. Despite all his man-of-the-match performances, thanks to Twitter, I do not think he has ever really played a particularly great game in a Spurs uniform.
I think he's fine, and he offers a lot of attacking, but I just look at his defense, and I just think, like, that guy can't hack it at our level, and I wish,
There's just nothing that he's ever given me to, like, dream on, where you could look at him and go,
he's giving me stuff to dream on. It's just, like, he doesn't do the other stuff that I need him to do. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, no, I understand. I just think, like, for me, like, anytime you watched him, and I guess this is what you're saying in a different way, but, like, you just looked at him and it's just like, this is okay, this is good, this is not so great, and it's just, you only ever looked at him and saw someone who was, you know, kind of Kyle Naughton or, you know, Ryan Fredericks, Adam Smith, like someone who could be a Premier League level fullback, but not someone who was a Champions League level, want to contend for a title fullback.
Yep.
And I'm sure, I'm sure he'll have a great season wherever he goes. And we'll all talk about how it was a really dumb idea to sell him, and, you know, whatever. But, like, ultimately, the thing is, like, he's, what, 22, 23 right now, and he still hasn't played regularly in the Premier League until really kind of, you know, this stretch with Southampton here. And so we just kind of wasted a lot of his development.
Yep. I think that's a big criticism you can level at latter-era Pochettino Spurs, which is... And I don't know if that's a Pochettino thing or a Levy thing or whoever, but we seem to be getting it straightened out. But we're not loaning out. I mean, we need to be loaning out young talent to go get minutes. If we're not prepared to give it to them as Spurs, like if we're not going to give them like garbage, like, you know, FA Cup and League Cup and blowout minutes, you know, they need to be going on loan. And that's not something that, you know, it seems like we were taking super seriously. And I'm actually very heartened that we seem to be, you know, really reassessing our options this offseason.
Yeah, it's like Kyle Walker-Peters probably played more minutes against Barcelona than he ever did in the League Cup for Spurs. Yep. Like, it's just like, why?
He should have been getting minutes at, like, what he did at Southampton, which maybe it would have been, had to have been another team, but even if it's in the Championship, like, that guy should have been out on loan getting minutes if we weren't going to play him regularly. And clearly, I thought we were going to play him regularly this year, and then Pochettino certainly lost faith in him after that Manchester City match early in the season, and you just stopped playing him. And, you know, if you're not going to play this guy, what the hell is he doing on your team?
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, I think Mourinho seems to be taking steps to, you know, actually utilize the loan system.
Maybe that's just Mourinho doesn't like young players and doesn't give a shit, and maybe it's he understands, like, well, if I'm not going to play him, he needs to develop. I don't know which it is, but we're at least, it seems like we're doing the right thing right now.
And I mean, you know, it very well may be that. Like, it may just be, the only confirmed loan out that we have right now is Troy Parrott.
And it sounds like Skip might go to Fulham, which I think would be a great loan for him, assuming they're willing to play him.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost rather see Skip go somewhere in the Championship, but if he's going to play, you know, Premier League minutes and play, I mean, if he's going to start even 10 or 15 matches for Fulham, that's 10 or 15 more matches than he would have started for Spurs, you know what I mean? So, you know, I think it would be better for him to go and play, you know, 30, 40 matches in the Championship, but, you know, Premier League experience is important. And with respect to Parrott, like, he's 19 years old, and, you know, getting to go, you know, knock around in the Championship for a season, you know, like we said last week, even if he only scores a handful of goals and, you know, starts 10 or 15 matches, that's still better than what he would have done at Spurs. And so getting him that actual experience playing against real men and matches with real stakes is going to be huge.
Yep. Yep. No, I think it'll be good. And I'm very excited to see that continue to happen. But yeah, getting back to Højbjerg, like, I don't know. I think it's a great signing for the club. I think he's the kind of guy we've needed. And even if it's maybe a little past that, like Ben was talking about last week, it's, you know, fuck it. It can't hurt for now. And, you know, we're paying under $20 million for him and getting rid of a player who clearly just rightly or wrongly was not in our plans for the future. So,
yeah, know. I think that's the big thing to me is, you know, the risk on this signing in terms of the outlay here. Like, even if this is something that doesn't work out, what you've actually paid for him, it's definitely worth it. I mean, this isn't us, you know, spending $50 million on Tanguy and Dom, or more than that, on Tanguy and Ndombele. This is us spending, you know, net like $3 million on a player that we know can play in the Premier League. You know, this seems like a deal that's basically all upside.
Yeah, and it, again, like I would say, this feels like the kind of thing that we would have been doing this. Jose almost feels kind of incidental to this. This feels like a very Levy signing, and it's certainly something. It reminds me of some of our older signings, and it seems like we've been laying track with this for months now, to the point where like Everton's coming in with acceptable money, and you know he's telling them to go fuck off because he wants to come to Tottenham. And I don't know if there's like salary concerns or whatever, but we've laid enough groundwork here that clearly he was not willing to listen to other offers, which is bringing this all together is something we did with Vertonghen back in the day. We laid enough groundwork there that no one else was able to jump in on that. So it's nice to see us doing this again. I hope we see more of it, hopefully with right backs. That is the other bit of transfer news. We can close on this. The Serge Aurier rumors to Milan seem much more concrete than anything we're hearing about Ndombele, and it sounds like we might get rid of him. And I don't know. I think given some of his baggage and some of his dumb mistakes in games, a lot of Spurs fans are happy to see the back of him, and I'm certainly not, you know, the most attached to him, but I think he's a little bit better than we give him credit for. Certainly he's more essential than I think a lot of people are willing to credit him. And I don't know, like, we're not seeing super concrete links to other fullbacks. And if we're going to get rid of him, I mean, we probably need to buy a right back in any case. But if we're going to get rid of him, we need to buy two. So that's what's concerning about that to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, putting Aurier's, you know, off the field and other personal stuff aside, which I think we've kind of all discussed before and kind of universally agreed that, you know, we don't really want to be associated with all that. But the on-the-field stuff, you know, dumb penalties aside, foul throw-ins aside, he's actually, like, a pretty good right-back, like, better than average.
He's a right-back. It's just, you know, the thing about Aurier is you can always count on him to do some, like, just, like, one or two incredibly dumb things during any given game, and it's... You know, it's hard to sort of balance that, especially when he's got some other off the field baggage that he brings to the club.
Yeah, but you also get games where he like absolutely runs shit. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, like
absolutely.
So, and I mean, like, look, you know, Spurs fans have given him a lot of stick over the years for, you know, oh, he's not that great at crossing, whatever. Like, and I think maybe we got spoiled by Kieran Trippier being particularly good at it or whatever. But like, Aurier's pace down the right, Aurier, you know, opening up space because he runs that overlap and, you know, occupies fullbacks and wide midfielders. And, you know, Aurier, you know, getting to the byline and occasionally getting a good cross off. Like, that was a lot of our attack this year. And he did a halfway decent job of it. He's not Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's not Trippier in terms of what his delivery is. But I think he's a perfectly good right back for a club in the position that Spurs are in. And I think you hit the nail on the head where you said, like, if we bounce both him and Walker Peters, now we're looking at a situation where our right back options are, what, Sissoko? Gedson?
I don't even know.
Tanganga?
Tanganga is the only one of those names that is like approaching realistic. And he should still be, unless there's something they know that I don't, it seems to me he should be like both of our starters are hurt. like option as opposed to like a real backup. I mean, I don't mind shipping these guys out. I think clearly Walker Peters, I don't think Walker Peters was probably good enough for Spurs, at least the level we want to operate at. And I think, you know, Aurier's got enough issues, and if he's a headache, like, and you get the right money for him, I don't mind moving him on. But you better have a replacement lined up. And, you know, again, like, not there's no rumors out there, which doesn't necessarily mean that we are not working on this or that we do not have people lined up like that. We have absolutely pulled transfers completely out of our rear end. I mean, Bergvine, had anyone heard Spurs linked to him until the deal was a fait accompli? You know, Hunming's son was another one. It could absolutely be the case that, like, I don't know. I'm skeptical. Max Aarons, we'd be linked to him, and we wouldn't have heard about it by now. But, you know, it could absolutely be the case we're buying someone from the continent, and we just haven't heard anything reported about it. I'm just incredibly skeptical of that.
Yeah.
I don't think we're negotiating for somebody. I just don't think we're close.
No, there's just nothing concrete. And you know, we live in, you know, an era where, you know, lots of stuff is, you know, rumored or ITK is thrown around, and there aren't a lot of surprise transfers anymore. We haven't heard anything. You know, there aren't even, you know, we've been linked with folks like Aarons for a long time, and I think that's one of the reasons why those are still floating around. But there's certainly nothing concrete, nothing in terms of us making an approach, nothing about, you know, evaluation that Norwich has put on him, like
nothing that isn't like someone asking, you know, Alistair Gold, like, hey, who any right back links, and he just mentions him because we've been tied to him before. It doesn't feel new or, you know, fresh or, you know, anything that. I don't know. It concerns me. Like, I feel very glad we're addressing midfield and, you know, doing, like, it looks like Højbjerg's going to be in plenty of time for preseason. But, like, if we're going to sell Aurier, like, you better fucking get on your horse and get at least one right back in soon, if not both.
Well, that's the other thing. You make a good point, is we're basically, what, 5 weeks from the season starting?
Yeah, I don't even know when the Europa League shit starts, so maybe even sooner than that.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, if we want to do business, we want to get it in, like, now. One of the things that I've seen kind of thrown around on social media and the internet lately is that we won't confirm Europa Group League participation until October 1st. Like, that's when the last qualifying stage is. And the transfer window closes like October 5th or something like that. And so we won't know that we're getting that extra Europa League money until like 4 days before the window closes. And so people are speculating that that maybe means that we're going to do a bunch of late business, which, I mean, we're going to be doing late business anyway because of Spurs. But it'll be interesting to see if Mourinho and Levy decide to be proactive with the idea that, look, we're going to be in the Europa League group stages no matter what, so we'll just spend like we're going to, or if they wait and decide, let's see if we make it.
I mean, I don't know. If to me, it seems like if I'm Spurs, you've been through so much turmoil. Like, there's got to be a level, and I'm not talking about going out and getting like super rich players, but there's a level at which you've just got to be prepared to spend at a loss, or at least like, you know, take some risks for the foreseeable future that maybe we're not. I don't know. I feel like the Europa League doesn't bring in a lot of money, so who gives a shit? But like, I'm probably wrong about that.
Yeah, I have no idea what the figure is, but I think it's, I mean, it's not insubstantial. I think it's like, you know, 20 or 30 million pounds in terms of, you know, what the money you get for participating in the
Europa League. Just like, Jesus Christ, we can suck that shit up for a right back, like, especially because we've been needing to do this for years. I'm even willing to sit with, like, I do not, as has been noted on Twitter.com today, I am not a fan of Ben Davies, but, like, we have enough other problems that I'm willing to sort of ignore that for the time being.
You're definitely, you know, getting another season of Ben Davies.
Yeah, but we have, like, we probably ought to, in a, I don't want to say perfect world, because in a perfect world we buy four new fullbacks, but in a realistically perfect world, we would buy three right backs this offseason. And or three fullbacks this offseason. And, you know, I will be happy if we buy one, just because we, you know, we've been so beaten down by our transfer policy. It's just, and I mean, like I said, Daniel Levy could have something in the works that we're just not hearing about. I don't need to, you know, I don't need to hear rumors about it. I just want it to happen. And frankly, if we're going to be without a right back, an actual right back, it probably ought to happen sooner rather than later. This is like, that's not the kind of thing you want to leave late. Like, I'm willing to accept, like, to get good, some good players, you just need to leave it kind of late. But that's not an instance where I'm willing to accept it. Like, we need a right back in now. We need a right back in time for whenever Mourinho's preseason starts.
Absolutely.
At least one. Because, like, Tanganga is, like, it feels like he's very much a, you know, break glass right back. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it feels like...
I mean, I don't know. I we saw him play left back, and he is right-footed, so I assume that he can play right back. I just don't know what he gives you going forward, especially in a world where Ben Davis is basically your other fullback on the other side. That means you basically have no threat in terms of the overlap on either side, and that I don't particularly like the idea of. But I think he'd be probably fine as a fullback, as the backup, or, you know, as an emergency. I don't know. Without having seen him play more right back, I don't know that he's or can be a nailed on starter all the time.
Well, we're gonna find out, aren't we?
We sure will, and not too far away. We're gonna find out very soon.
Yeah, very soon. That's the thing that concerns me, is we just don't have a lot of time to operate. And hopefully, especially, like, I can't imagine we're not cooking something up if we are willing to sell Aurier. But I mean, you know, time's a wasting. So, Brian, do you have any? I think we're gonna wrap it up. We got an hour out of this, Brian. I'm very proud of us. With not a lot to talk about, we got an hour out of this podcast. I'm very proud of us. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I'm just going to say I'm not surprised that we managed to get an hour, because you and I are, of course, consummate professionals, unlike our colleague Ben Daniels. But yeah, you can find me on the internet at Twitter or on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y.
And you can find me on Twitter.com at Skipjack0079, where I am giving you the hottest Spurs and professional wrestling takes. So. For Brian, not Ben. Ben's not here. Fuck him. For Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.